Hey, I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Mission Matters. My name is Adam Torres, and if you'd like to be a guest in the show, just head on over to missionmatters.com and click on Be Our Guest to apply. All right, so today I have Nicholas Rose on the line. He's co-founder of Hyperscale. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Adam.
All right, Nick, so this is a big one. Improving your lead to cash life cycle. A lot of business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives watch this show. And I mean, they're looking for exactly what you're talking about. I'm excited to also get some insight and tips for us over here at Mission Matters. So excited to pick your brain for my audience and myself. But we'll start this episode the way that we start them all, with our Mission Matters Minute. So Nick, we at Mission Matters, we amplify stories for entrepreneurs, executives, and experts. That's our mission. Nick, what mission matters to you?
Yeah, so for us, you know, every company is looking to scale and like grow revenue. But many of them spend money and a lot of it in places or in tools, especially marketing and sales. And they kind of blindly expect results will improve. And the growth doesn't materialize, and it's hard to figure out what's causing those problems. For us, our mission is to help those companies improve how marketing and sales kind of work together and really drive revenue. And this function's pretty much been called RevOps or revenue operations at most companies, but really the time is a lot of people don't have the resources for it or the capabilities to solve some of these large complex problems. So we help companies build these foundations and make them basically so they can have rapid growth, really by connecting these teams, technologies, powering people to make the decisions. And we do this across the lead to cash life cycle, fixing common problems, like improving visibility in the marketing funnel, understanding ROI, things like that. So we're really excited about this. Love to talk about these topics, helping companies out with these issues.
Perfect. And we'll be getting some tips from you today and also some insight. But, you know, let's go a little bit further back in your career. So I'm interested. I mean, like, how does the guy, the entrepreneur, decide that they want to go into helping other businesses scale? Like, where did this entrepreneurial journey start for you?
So this started with my other co-founder, Ben Moley. He used to be at Bain Consulting. Myself, I was at Dell. We did, been in sales, been in marketing, but started really in mergers and acquisitions and did 22 of them in the Dell Software Group. And we were slamming, kind of combining companies together, you know, basically changing out the sales process, changing out the marketing process. And that's where we got, and basically really cut a lot of our teeth on this. We got to see a lot of different areas. We went to a startup ourselves in Boston called Mendix. We were basically like employee 80 when we started. It was like very, very little people. There's only like 20 people in the US and mostly everyone in the Netherlands. When we grew that company up to about 3,000, we sold that off to Siemens. Yeah. And so that was a really nice like kind of milestone. And so after that, we're like, well, we've done the enterprise. We've seen all these different companies, the challenges and the obstacles they have, helped them grow. We've been part of the startup world, grown it from, you know, very, very few employees to, you know, 3,000, had a really good exit. What do we do next? And we decided, like, let's go start our own operations company. And we were having consulting and people were reaching out to us, learning from expertise. And we just started to go off and make a Hyperscale with the focus of helping companies, like, grow. And so these fast-growing companies, too.
So I think one of the interesting things about your background is that you've done everything from, you know, huge companies like Dell, been there and watched or assisted in multiple acquisitions or mergers there. And then you joined a startup yourself. So you've seen that small startup environment and then it helped grow it to, you know, a larger company, enterprise level with thousands of employees. And then you transitioned kind of after you already had your, already had your footing in the industry and saw maybe what worked and what didn't. I guess, you know, the first thing that comes to mind is, do certain themes or obstacles tend to arise for businesses as they go through these challenges? And I'll tell you briefly the reason why I asked this question. Sometimes as business owners, when we're sitting in our business and sitting in the chair every day, we feel like everything's unique. Like, no, this is not our business. Our business is this or that. And I fell into that trap when I first started as an entrepreneur, by the way. So I'll pick on myself before you answer the question. But do certain themes tend to arise like over and over again that you see?
Yeah, definitely, Adam. There are certain themes that arise, in particular in certain industries, right? Mm-hmm. So I will say, yes, not everyone is different, right? But there are right. some changes in some certain industries, like a little bit, Absolutely. It's different in SaaS than, say, like manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is, you know, founders and CEOs will get stuck into kind of a pattern, which really happens, especially when kind of money was free in the market. They would put more money towards marketing sales. I'm going to hire more salespeople. I'm going to hire more marketing people, and we'll just brute force it our way out, right, so to speak, right? Or the revenue will come there. They look at an Excel sheet or planning, you know, I add 10 more people, I'm going to get $10 million of revenue. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily work because, you know, there's other problems within the business process or efficiency that stomps it. And that could be the tools or the systems. And the problem is they don't realize that until the bottom's dropped or it's starting to drop, right? And then it's a panic mode. And the problem, and the big part is the problem to fix their address that's already passed, right? And so they're going to have to eat that more.
Maybe let's start with, I want to start pretty basic. So define the lead to cash lifecycle. Let's start there.
Yeah. So, you know, if you ever think you've been on the website, you know, you Google and you take a very simple example, like a car dealership, right?
Yeah.
Where you're looking for an F-150 or something. You know, you Google, look at reviews, you see a nice form that says, hey, fill this out if you want to get this information. You fill it out, like that's your lead. That name or information has been captured. It's gone to, you know, a car dealership. And then a sales guy would pick that up. That lead's going to turn into, and the sales guy's going to say, hey, if this is an opportunity, has a conversation with you, mm-hmm. right? And then that's the part of the opportunity process that you come back and talk to the sales guy. Mm-hmm. The cash process, when we go back, so it'd be lead, opportunity, cash would be, all right, you close the deal, right? You've paid it, financed, whatever else. And then now the accounting department and the finance department needs to watch that transaction, make sure that transaction goes through. And that's the cash part, right? And the cash part gets really, really complicated or really matters a lot, especially for these scaling businesses, because you could have multiple different ledgers, different products, different things to track mm-hmm. back to customers or customer relationship. So like, it's a very easy way to describe it. That helps people, that's tangible for other people to understand.
Yeah. And the idea here is that if you can also, you know, compress that time, if you can make it more efficient as well, and, you know, and you, everything, I don't want to stereotype because everybody has a different challenge within that cycle, or I don't want to generalize because everybody has a different challenge within that cycle. But if you can get all of the pieces within that funnel working correctly or optimized, then in theory, I mean, you should, that's where you can really start to hit scale, and you can understand as a CEO or, you know, sit in the C-suite, like where the best efficient investment and, you know, where you should allocate resources. Is that the basic concept?
Yeah. If you have the funnel efficiency figured out and you're starting to put the dollars in the right places, that's where you can really scale the business. Hmm. And that matters a lot. And the thing that people don't realize is, it's not all ratioed the same, right? It's not like 33 or 50% all the way out through. You're going to get more money maybe at the top of the funnel at certain times than the bottom. So mm-hmm. like that also helps out. And we do the analysis and help out companies with that too.
Yeah. Why do some companies plateau?
There's probably two different reasons for that. I think one from the market and scale, especially when you see, look at earlier startups, most of their business is done off of referrals or during certain periods of other people that they know in industry, or you'll have people who are willing to, specifically if their product is disruptive, they're willing to try out those items or that product that you have. And that market might be getting saturated, right? Or get filled mm-hmm. out and get anyone else. And that's when usually some people plateau. And yeah. so then they have to do marketing or cold calling to go out to the other areas with it. The other time it plateaus is, you know, there's just usually a business process or a function mm-hmm. that breaks with inside the company. Usually a big one, sales enablement. You know, they'll hire more reps. Those reps aren't really being trained effectively or training correctly, and they can't sell effectively, right? And so that's another way they plateau. Usually those are the two ways.
Yeah, I can see that. And one of the thought processes or one of the logics that I think is like, what got you to $1 million in revenue? It's not going to be the same thing that gets you to 10 million, right? Like there's going to be something that has to change, whether it's infrastructure or other ways. And that whatever gets you that 10 million, I'm just picking those numbers out of a hat, by the way, you might have better data or a better metric on all these numbers. But I just mean like, you can't expect that what got you to where you're at is going to get you to where you want to go.
Yeah, very, very true. I mean, and part of the process there too, also the people, right? Like even my times in Dell has taught me this, right? Yeah. Even Michael Dell was scaling his company. He had 12 different CFOs, right? At certain stages, the same people that get you to 0 to 100 are not the same people most of the time to get you from 100 to a billion.
Yeah. And so one of the topics or one of the points you brought up in here, and I want to go a little bit further in it, is the communication between sales and marketing. I feel like that's the age old conversation, right? So sales says marketing's not giving us the right lead, and marketing says sales isn't closing the deal. Like what? Give us some insight in your experience on that communication factor.
Yeah.
I put you on the hot seat on that one, depending on which one is listening, right?
Yeah. Well, it's always a fun time when you walk into a room and see both the leaders yelling at each other. I think so. Mainly, it comes down to is they're both siloed, right? And they're supposed to be. And you know, I mean, let's be real. Nobody goes to college and they don't really teach marketing or sales, right? In today's world, for people to really understand it or running a business at that point. Yeah. And I think a part of that is those groups are so siloed out, there's just not really an effective communication bridge or gap between marketing and sales. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of times it needs to become on marketers, not to pick on marketers here, mm-hmm. bridging that gap, coaching, teaching sales what needs to happen with their campaign or how to follow up or working with messaging. Mm-hmm. And then sales has to take that and actually run it and then be a little bit more open-minded in that case. Mm-hmm. But most of the time it's because those two groups are so siloed out and they're not looking to communicate across the other aisle, so to speak.
Mm. And so also thinking about, I guess we have to pick on the tech while we're here. We picked on sales, we picked on marketing. All right, let's talk about tech. So many different platforms, so many tech, not like what else do we have to bring to make this thing grow? Like let's pick on that side for a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. If you look at the history, like you see me MarTech or even sales tech, it's getting big. Thinking like 2003, there were maybe like 50 or 100 different platforms out there for technology. You look at today, there's a nice little infographic. There's over almost like 500,000 different technologies out there. You know, you look at for like sales acceleration technologies, there's like 50 different kinds, right? SalesLoft, Outreach, right? Gong. Like people can't make heads or tails out of that. Yeah. And the secondary problem is people will buy technology thinking it will solve their business process problems. Mm-hmm. And it won't, right? Because usually it's like the dog wagging the tail, or the tail wagging the dog, sorry. Mm-hmm. They need to figure out the business process before buying the right platform. Mm-hmm. And that happens is people can buy the wrong technology too because they don't know what they need from a business process. So then sometimes they're stuck having the wrong technology for 2 or 3 years. We do help a lot of people out with that also.
So I wanna jump around a bit here. So let's go further into a hyperscale. So the actual firm, you told us a little bit, but I want to go further. So tell us a little bit more about exactly maybe what you do and the types of firms that you help, whether it's by revenue or whether it's by industry, but just to give us a flavor, because at the end of this, I'll give you the opportunity, of course, to leave contact information because I want people that make sense to definitely follow up and take you up on what you're doing.
Yeah, so we really work with CEOs, CMOs, CROs, and private equity firms. Mm-hmm. I would say we probably work mostly from 100 to 150 employees. Mm-hmm. Those are the companies that are getting ready to scale or wanting to move to the next step. Mm-hmm. And then we really work with large enterprise companies, 5,000, maybe 20,000, 30,000 employees who are mm-hmm. trying to solve like really complex strategy problems between their technology, sales, and marketing that they just don't have the expertise to go figure out, right? Yeah. So many people that have done like deduplication projects are like, how do they enter into Asia, right? Like there's not a lot of people that have that expertise. You know, we do have some of those. So those are the type of companies we work with and employees. We really focus more on, say, business-to-business companies. Mm-hmm. We don't have expertise in consumers. We try to avoid away from that. But then we really focus on tech, PLG type product-led growth companies, manufacturing, and really just fast-growing companies at the end of the day.
Yeah. And one of the things that, as I've done, you know, some research into what you guys do that I believe is unique is that there's consulting, but you also work on the implementation side. Like, tell me more about that.
Yeah, so that's a really good point, Adam. A lot of companies will either do, all right, we're just going to do the implementation. So if we're doing Salesforce, we're just doing Salesforce. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do the business process. Tell us what you're going to do. And then the other groups will do the consulting and strategy, but they won't help you implement it. So it'll be a binder on your, you know, bookcase says, hey, how to go do it, and then just sits there for years on end because you guys never can go do it.
Yeah.
We do both, right? We do the consulting and the strategy side, and we do the implementation. And that's really helpful because we can carry it always, you know, from cradle to grave.
Mm-hmm. Any stories you care to share, like just about, you know, things that you've seen in the industry since you've been on this journey as an entrepreneur yourself? So anything that kind of sticks out?
Yeah, I think the big one is for us would be, you know, we help a lot of companies, especially on the private equity side, because mm-hmm. Private equity companies will hire us, especially once they finish a deal with the company, and yeah. They kind of get like, all right, let's get it back healthy and get it on the right road. We help a lot of companies with basically what we call a marketing foundations piece. And there's a lot of areas where people don't really know how to like measure their marketing spend. What are those campaigns? And then really what it comes down to is they'll have a lot of good, let's say campaigns or marketing ideas and execution there, but it's getting lost, right? Because it goes to the sales reps or SDRs, it's not getting followed up on. And so like those are probably the biggest issues we tackle. It's really fixing that funnel from lead to, say, opportunity creation, measuring it and making sure people are effectively following up on those leads correctly, really, to turn them into opportunity.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense that you would work with private equity also, just because they're venture capital, because like they're dealing with a lot of different companies. And then when they hire somebody or when they want to scale something, like they want it to be done, they want to make sure there's a level of oversight there and they're not day-to-day management. Since you work on both the consulting and the implementation side, it seems to me like you'd be in a unique position to be able to both speak the language, do, and have, you know, that feedback loop, right?
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, since we've seen the large enterprise and the startups too, there's a different level, let's say, maturity between, like, you know, the crawl, walk, run. I hate to use that example, but it's really, really true.
Yeah.
Like, there's 20 different ways to do some things. Sometimes mm-hmm. more simplistic approach is the best way to go do it, but some people mm-hmm. don't know how to actually apply it or execute mm-hmm. it back for the company in need. And so that's usually what we get brought in to do that, especially in the private equity side, because, you know, they want to turn around. They don't need this 20-step sales process by any means. They need a 4-day sales process. Let's go.
Mm-hmm. I want you to walk me through like what the kind of like what the user journey would look like to work with Hyperskill. And by the way, not to oversimplify, I know every single, I'll preface it by saying every company is going to be different, industry, you know, size of company, all these other things like that, and this where they're at, the founders. I know there's infinite complexity there. But like, what does it look like just in general to kind of walk through that process or to get started?
Yeah, it's a good question, Adam. And so when we usually start this process, we kind of ask like, hey, we just do a kind of a quick discovery session. Mm-hmm. You know, what's really a pain point? Help us understand like what your problems are. And then what we usually ask is we do a scoping for free, right, for the mm-hmm. business. We look at the systems. We talk to the marketing exec or the sales exec, mm-hmm. usually an outreach, just try to get an idea of like what's going on. Mm-hmm. And then we come back and say, hey, this is a suggestion or a strategy conversation. And then kind of have a proposal. And so that's usually how the engagement works. And it's been very, very successful for us.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, if you're doing a thorough needs analysis and the idea here, I believe I picked this up from what you said, is that you're not necessarily trying to fix or do everything at once, right? You're looking at, okay, what's the pain point? And then you're kind of evaluating like what makes sense in what order to tackle what at what time. Is that kind of what I'm getting here?
Yeah, and I think the order of how you tackle things are really, really important, right?
Yeah.
You know, people want to go, you know, we handle forecasting, right, as an example. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have the forecasting methodology, really, they really can't do forecasting correctly, right? And there's a lot of problems with that. And we see people also trying to put technology in those places without trying to get some of the basics covered too, right, which compounds the problem also.
Yeah. Layers on layers and legacy, Nick. Come on, unravel it, right?
Yeah, there's definitely some tech debt in every place.
As there should be, though, by the way, not, I mean, cause a lot of companies, I mean, you know, if you started a certain way and you were set, you didn't, maybe you had a thesis, right? And it got bigger and it got bigger. You wake up one day, you look around and you're like, wait, where'd all these people come from? Right? 50, 100 people. And you're like, okay, you've had your nose down. You've been kind of looking at what you need to do. You've been executing and now you're hitting this plateau and you're thinking, okay, what am I missing? And you're not necessarily going to, in my opinion, many times, you're not going to be able to figure that out just on your own or with your internal team. I believe, and I 100% am an advocate of looking at for outside help, especially with specialty firms like yours, because one of the big differences here is that, you know, if you're trying to solve that problem or that challenge within your company, okay, you're solving one problem. But if you're working with a team that's solving this problem or helping many, many companies with this, you also have the unique vantage point of learning experience from cross industry, cross sector, different sizes of companies, and then also track record. So to me, it's like you're hiring the specialist that's going to be able to come in and hopefully figure out some things with the assistance of your team and then really allow that business to scale. Is that the gist?
Yeah, it is. And I can't stress this enough. Some people feel like it's bad to go for outside help, especially when you're a young firm, right? Because like money can necessarily be tight and I get that and that can be okay. Yeah. But there's only so many people on the market who have skills and expertise that have also gone through like a scaling company. And most of the time, you're not going to have people on your bench or in your company that have gone through that. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to learn the hard way, which means there's going to be an impact to the business, or you can bring some outside help to help basically navigate, coach or implement so that you don't have to hit, you know, that wall in 6 months. You can avoid it, right? And I really, really stress that to a lot of CEOs that aren't necessarily thinking about that, right? Because, you know, operations is very, very diverse and very, very specialized. And so like you can get a person who's good in like one or two things, but they're not going to be a Swiss Army knife that you're looking for to cover everything, right? It's just not reality.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and this is, again, this is my bias, not yours. So I'll say it. The people that are really good or really get into this, they started companies like Hyperscale. So they're not going to join your team as a full-time employee. Like you guys are the ones that are out there doing it. And this is your sport. This is what you want to do. You want to get these big wins for companies. Like, so you know what I mean? In order to get somebody like yourself in your team, you have to hire outside help. There's no choice. Like
architect, I worked with him for many, many years, right? He's at Accenture. He has these experiences solving these big problems. Yeah. And guess what? He wants to keep solving these big problems at other companies.
Yeah.
He's been to the company. He's already completed it, right? He slayed the dragon. Yeah. Now what? You're not going to keep or retain those type of talent or people either, right? Because those people, like you said, Adam, are going to join us or other consulting firms because they want to keep solving those big problems, right? So people need to realize that too.
Yeah, it's a different personality type. It's a different feel. And I'm grateful for guys like you that are out there. I'm getting it done. Well, Nick, I have to say I learned a lot today and I had a lot of fun on this episode. I just have to ask, what's next? I mean, what's next for you? What's next for Hyperscale?
I mean, we're growing. We've already hit, you know, roughly around 20 employees. We're going to probably look to double our revenue already. We've already done that this year. So this has been great. So for us, we're just going to keep on expanding and we're looking to hire great talent, great operations people that are looking. So if anyone's interested, you know, come out and reach my emails, nick.rose@hyperscale.com. Be more than happy to talk to people.
It's awesome. And we'll put all that information in the show notes so that, you know, our audience can just click on the links and head right on over. And speaking of the audience, if this is your first time with Mission Matters or engaging with the platform, we're all about bringing on entrepreneurs, executives, and experts and having them share their mission, how they're making a difference in the market, and really what we can all learn from that so that we can all grow together. If that's the type of content that you're into or sounds interesting or engaging to you, hit that subscribe button because we have many more mission-based individuals just like Nick coming up on the line and we don't want you to miss a thing. And Nick, man, congrats on the growth, congrats on all the success, and congrats on all the companies out there that are working with Hyperscale and have the benefit of your and your team's expertise. So thanks again for coming on the show.
Thanks a lot, Adam. Take care.